And New Zealand's newest route has been delivering more than a few bumps. It's less than 2 weeks since the airline started flying direct between Auckland and New York. But some of the issues it struck have included having to offload bags, passengers, and make plans for a possible pit stop in Fiji. The airline says it's encountered winds much stronger than when it had researched and planned over the past 2 years. As a result, it's had to reduce passenger numbers on the return leg to Auckland. With Air New Zealand due to be joined next year by Qantas on the Auckland to New York run, what's the long-term viability of ultra-haul long flights like these? And can passengers be certain they'll get their bag at the other end? To discuss, and the plethora of problems plaguing the global aviation industry right now, we welcome Geoffrey Thomas. He's the editor-in-chief of AirlineRatings.com and has been writing about aviation issues for over 40 years. Geoffrey, good morning, and it really is good morning. Early morning in Perth, about 4. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Catherine. Yes, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, but that's when you do lots of good work in the early hours.
Good stuff, and very convenient for us, so welcome. Look, much was made of this new route by Air New Zealand, and I'm sure it's been disappointed by some of the headlines that have accompanied the launch. Do you think it's a temporary situation? Will it get sorted out?
Look, indeed, it is a flagship route, if you like, and very important to Air New Zealand to bring high value Americans from the East Coast to New Zealand. Yes, they certainly will sort this issue out. The winds have been considerably stronger than forecast through their modelling. I mean, they've been planning this for 2 years, but they also look back further than that, with all the winds over a longer period, to work out what the average they could expect or what the worst they can expect. And those winds have been beyond that. So it's quite an exceptional set of weather circumstances that have given it, as you suggest, a few bumps and some passengers certainly inconvenienced. But I believe that will be a temporary situation. They will iron it out. What they're doing at the moment is reducing the number of passengers on the aircraft to be able to maintain the integrity of the route. Qantas does the same. They've got an A380 service from Dallas to Sydney, and the 787 is a longer ranged aeroplane than the A380. They have similar problems every now and again out of Dallas, Texas. At the same time, still talking of Qantas, they do a service from Perth to London, which is about the same distance as the New York to Auckland one, but they don't encounter the same sorts of winds that Air New Zealand is encountering at the moment. But yes, certainly they will sort this out, and it'll become a very, very important route for the airline.
Well, sort them out unless the La Niña becomes ever more frequent. And I guess this is the issue, isn't it? I mean, we talk about headwinds in the sense of business and launching a new product. These are literal headwinds. And is it possible that the research on the that was done in advance of launching the route may have been, you know, maybe dated? I mean, this was originally planned pre-pandemic, finally established this month. Is it possible that things have changed, or that the research happened in a different weather pattern? I mean, how can you know, Geoffrey?
Sure. You look, that's a very interesting point, Catherine, you make, because this particular issue is the tip of climate change, and airlines around the world are now looking at various impacts of climate change, and one of those impacts is stronger winds, more intense weather systems, and so they're having to factor this in to their operations and say, okay, well, the assumptions we made before, we have to change them. One of the other impacts is increased turbulence. Mind you, that's offset by the fact that these aircraft, like the 787, are equipped with the most sophisticated weather radar that do a much better job in detecting turbulence situations, and so they're able to avoid it. But yes, it is a signal of climate change that is coming, that is with us. Yes, some of the calculations will have to be rethought going forward, and possibly less reliance on historical data and more focus on the here and now.
So what is the challenge of the very long haul versus the 11 or 12-hour stopover from here, stopover in Hong Kong, stopover in LA, stopover in Singapore? What's the difference when it comes to aircraft, fuel, and generally dealing with the challenges of weather?
Well, the issue is how much payload, and payload can be three things. Payload is fuel that you're carrying. It weighs a lot. The number of passengers you have on board and their bags, because they tend to like to go together, and cargo. So, for instance, the New York to Auckland service probably carries no cargo at all. Whereas, say, Los Angeles, Auckland carries a lot of cargo. The airplane can carry so much payload, and it's a mixture of those three things. So if you're doing an ultra long haul flight, first of all, you've got to have full fuel, all the tanks full of fuel. Then you've got the headwinds. Okay, what sort of headwinds are we encountering? So then we have to sort of offload the cargo. There's no cargo. Then we have to look at the passenger count. How many passengers, how much weight there can we carry? So all of these, all these factors go into a mix, and the airline then looks at it and says, well, yes, this is viable or this is not viable. I mean, an empty 787 just with fuel and nothing else could, for instance, fly from New York all the way to Perth and beyond. I took part in a world record flight in 2005, which with a Boeing 777, which is not as long a range as the 78, and we flew all the way from Hong Kong to London the wrong way, across the Pacific, across the United States, across the Atlantic, and it was 22 hours and 40 minutes in the air, so way more than 17 hours. And we only had 30 passengers on board, completely uneconomical. It was just a test flight to just demonstrate the performance of the aeroplane. So, without any passengers, these aeroplanes can fly for probably 24 hours. So, obviously, it has to be viable. Now, the other dynamic to this is Air New Zealand would say, well, for this sort of flight, this is a high value flight, business class, premium economy type passengers. So they're the ones we direct this flight to. So they may in the longer term, and I think this is happening with the new 787s they're getting next year, is have a different configuration where you have fewer passengers, but they're higher yield passengers, which of course is what New Zealand has always been focused on attracting, is very high yield tourism to all those fabulous seven-star resorts you have, and that's a big target for
Okay,
the airline.
so they may end up running with less than maximum capacity when it comes to passengers, but financially making it up because the ticket's going to cost a lot, which is another discussion for us to have in a moment. Qantas also due to start up its own Auckland to New York route, as we said. Will they be watching what's happening here very carefully?
Oh, look, indeed, they'll be looking at it, and they've probably made exactly the same assumptions at Air New Zealand, and they're probably going back to the drawing board or the computer screen and saying, well, look, we need to put input some new numbers into this, and have a look. Now, there's a difference between the 787s that Qantas operate and the ones that Air New Zealand operates, because the Qantas ones have fewer seats. They have 236 seats. I think the Air New Zealand one has 265 seats. So Qantas designed theirs from the outset for the Perth London non-stop and all the challenges of that. They've already got an aeroplane that has fewer seats. So they may not have the same sort of problems that Air New Zealand is having initially, but again, they will be certainly looking at the experience that Air New Zealand has encountered.
The stop off into Fiji on an early flight, was it necessary? Possibly conservative, but necessary?
Look, I think it's Air New Zealand is with Qantas, operationally the two best airlines in the world. There's no question about that whatsoever. Outstanding, ultra conservative, but that's the way we want it. And yes, I don't think the Fiji stop was necessary, but they always err on the side of caution, absolutely. And the other issue is it may not be the winds necessarily en route. It could be very, very bad weather in Auckland. And all of a sudden, Auckland has has problems, and maybe Wellington's got problems. Some of the alternates have got problems. So if you have problems at the destination with your weather, and you know you folks have had some pretty gnarly weather, then that becomes a big issue as well. And so you've got to have so much fuel for holding here and so much fuel for holding there as another alternative. You know, so there's some dynamics around the arrival area which also come to play with if all of a sudden, you know, that it's halfway across the Pacific, everything's going fine, and all of a sudden the weather forecast for Auckland and the alternate to Auckland becomes suboptimal, then all of a sudden, yes, we have to find somewhere to drop in and pick up another 2 or 3 hours of fuel just to make sure when we do get to our destination, we have all the options open to us.
Geoffrey Thomas is our guest. He's the editor-in-chief of AirlineRatings.com, has been writing about aviation issues for over 40 years. It's 18 minutes past nine on 9 to noon. Let's look about the recovery, in inverted commas, for airlines generally and for air travel generally post-pandemic. It was one of the most severely hit industries. We know that airlines have got planes parked up in deserts, and the challenge now is how to bring them back, when to bring them back, how to staff them, how to crew them, how to price them. We've seen the debacle of the early reopening of global travel with people missing bags, missing a flight, and then having to pay an exorbitant fee to try and get back on their travel plans. Is it beginning to sort of shake down, Geoffrey?
It is beginning to shake down. It has been. I mean, I characterize it like this. Before COVID, the airline industry was like a Formula One car, number one on the grid, about to, you know, and that's the way it was. Now it's like a broken down truck. The airline industry, more than any other industry in the world, has been devastated by COVID. We've all been impacted by COVID. The airline industry globally has laid off tens of millions of workers because it had to. Overnight, 10,000 aeroplanes were grounded around the world. And the industry itself, over the last 2 years, has lost approximately $300 billion. Staggering amount of money, and they're trying to put all the pieces back together. One of the big issues is that we can't get a lot of these people back into the industry that were laid off because they've got another job somewhere else or they've retired. And then the other issue we've got is COVID illness. And now while, you know, we're able to travel now and flights are resuming, COVID is still in the community. And in Australia, for instance, with Qantas, they have up to 30% of their staff on COVID illness leave or close contact leave at any one time. So it's been an enormous challenge. And it's not just the airlines, it's all the components to the airline industry, the ground handlers, the caterers, air traffic control, border security, customs and quarantine, the aircraft manufacturers, the engine makers, all of these parts to the industry that make it work have been devastated by COVID and the loss of staff. And yes, it is a very, very painful restart. Lots of folks' holidays have been ruined and very traumatic, because right now, you know, with the stresses in the world at the moment, everybody really wants a holiday and they're being mucked up. But yes, Catherine, it is coming back together slowly. And the estimates are that it'll be the middle of next year before it gets back to what we would consider normal pre-COVID reliability across the globe. And it's far worse in Europe.
What about prices also? The cost of international plane tickets seems to have gone through the roof. And is that reflected globally? And is that simply because there aren't the number of flights to deal with demand at the moment? They are still trying to coordinate demand and supply.
Look, absolutely, you're spot on. prices are sky high at the moment, and the reasons are multiple. One of these is that airlines have cut back their growth plans because they can't guarantee the integrity of their schedule because too many flights were being cancelled. So they've sort of, because of COVID illness, so they've cut back the number of flights. So they've got more reserve crew to drop in to replace COVID illnesses. The demand has been unprecedented. People desperately want to get back to a holiday, to fly. So yes, these stresses are causing the airfares to climb, and yes, it is expensive. Although, if you book far enough ahead. And this doesn't help the business person, of course, but if you book far enough ahead, the leisure traveller, there are some really good fares out there for into next year. But if you want to fly next week, well, it's very expensive because most of the seats are gone, and you're buying the one on the last seats on the aeroplane, and they're the expensive ones.
Geoffrey, there's the future of the industry. Many industries have had to reconsider everything, I guess, in the wake of being totally shut by the pandemic, but also what it is indicating, and that is the potential for major disruptions to business as usual and not just from one incident. We started off talking about very high headwinds, unexpectedly high headwinds, and how this affected one airline company and how it may affect plans in the future. Climate change will affect their operations, but of course climate change commitments and pressures to cut emissions may also affect them in different ways, including possible cost pressures sheeting home from levies or whatever. We've still not sorted out in international agreements who's going to pay for the emissions that happen in international travel. How much of a looming threat to travel as we have expected it is that, and are airlines getting their heads around it?
Lots of good questions, Catherine. Look, the airline industry, and it's interesting because I write a book called Greener Wings, which actually details aviation's true impact on the environment. Now, we're writing the new version of it at the moment, the fourth edition. One of the interesting graphs we do is since 1960, jet era, improvement in aeroplanes has been staggering. We've reduced the amount of fuel used per passenger by 84%, staggering number. For instance, the 787 that Air New Zealand flies at the moment, it uses 34% less fuel per passenger than the big super jumbo, the A380 that Qantas uses. So the aviation industry is absolutely focused on reducing the fuel burn. And by evidence, when we were talking earlier about what can an aeroplane carry, it carries fuel, it carries passengers, it carries cargo. So the less fuel it carries, the more paying passengers and the more paying cargo it can carry. So there's a commercial imperative to cut the fuel. It's the fundamental of aviation, is to cut the amount of fuel that you need. And the industry's making colossal strides in that, and has been for decades for that particular reason. Going forward, airlines like Air New Zealand, I mean, they are one of the best at this, doing all sorts of things to cut fuel consumption, and including getting into biofuels. And that's the future. There's biofuels that are basically carbon neutral, and we've got hydrogen coming along as well. So the industry is well and truly on track to achieve net zero emissions by 2050, because of all the exciting things that are happening when it comes to the amount of fuel that aeroplanes use and the type of fuel that the aviation industry use.
Yeah.
And biofuels have been around for quite some time. The big issue is scaling up the production of those to a point where it actually makes a significant difference to the industry. But as I said earlier, Air New Zealand is at the forefront of this because they see it anyway as part of their DNA, that they're bringing people to a pristine environment like New Zealand. It just sits in with their whole messaging. let alone the economic imperative of doing it.
It's interesting, though, Geoffrey. I mean, there's mixed optimism. In other words, some people are optimistic and some are very pessimistic about the role of biofuels, in part because the inputs are so hard to access and because the inputs often require a substitution of crops that might otherwise be used to feed people. And that's an ongoing debate, right? But certainly if we got to the point where they were a universal solution, there'd be real stresses on land use. And hydrogen, of course, brings its own issues, including the amount of emissions involved sometimes in its production, in inverted commas, right? It's being put in a suitable form for use. So that's an unanswered question. And with the pressure coming on global agreements now more focused on 2030 than 2050, according to the scientists, one wonders how this is going to land. But to that question of when emissions, currently I think they're 2.5% of CO2 emissions globally, and more than that if you take into account other impacts. If they were to be allocated, international emissions were to be allocated a price, again, it's going to hit the ticket holder, right? And might multiple forces ultimately be what curbs what has been a golden era for travel? Because price is going to limit people as much as anything else.
Look, it's an interesting comment, Catherine. And passengers can offset their carbon use of their flight right now by ticking the box when they make their booking. I don't think airlines make a big enough play of exactly where the money is going. The money that the passenger pays is going. You know, what particular green project, offset project. Yes, it will impact ticket prices. It will impact ticket prices. Not a great deal. Not a great deal. This is the thing. It's not a massive thing to offset your flight right now. And so yes, it will. It will impact the cheap, you know, the low-cost traveler will be impacted more because their ticket might be $300 for a particular flight. Suddenly it's $350. That's the tipping point for them, so they don't travel. But business class, premium economy travel, for them it's almost incidental to the ticket prices they're paying. So yes, it will increase ticket prices, but at the same time, you know, there are other costs out there as well that are impacting travel at the moment as well. So yes, there is going to be an impact, but I don't think it'll be onerous. But the other thing about aviation, you know, we're 2.5% of CO2, but aviation. China's cement production, for instance, China's cement production is half of all the CO2 for the airlines of the entire world. So there are other industries out there that need to do a lot better than they are when it comes to CO2. I mean, if I would say without any shadow of a doubt, if every industry in the world had made the progress that aviation has made in reducing the amount of CO2, then we wouldn't have a problem. The aviation industry, which is painted as the pariah, is the world's leading industry when it comes to reducing emissions.
Geoffrey, thank you very much. Geoffrey Thomas, who is editor-in-chief of AirlineRatings.com, has been writing about aviation issues for over 40 years.